Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly programme looking at all the latest tech news and what's going on from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. We always love to hear from you. Written messages or voice notes are always welcome. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be talking all about home recording, from the basic to the high-end options. We'll be talking about some of the most accessible options that we've found that are out there today. Hubert has been trying out Instagram now that Connect Radio has made an appearance on there. And Jackie Brown will be demoing a new unintentionally accessible device that has helped her to relax more. Always very nice. The usual co-hosts joining me this week, Hubert Pavelkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Let's see what's going on this week. Hubert, what have you got? I have a feeling I know what the talking point is going to be this week, but yeah, we'll start with you.
Apple have been up to things. They've released just a few new devices. I've picked up a few highlights. Not all of them. I've skipped the studio displays, but you can read more about them on AppleVis because they've got all of the articles about all the new devices. Some highlights, though, for me, the new MacBook Neo, for me, is one of the two highlights. The main highlight for this is Apple's most affordable MacBook yet, because the starting price of this one is $599, but pounds are going to be in the UK. With an education discount, it is as low as £499, which for a MacBook is quite surprising. And it's a good spec, pretty much. It includes 256 gigabytes of storage with no Touch ID for the base model. If you pay an extra £100, you can get Touch ID and 512 gigabytes. It includes an A18 processor, so pretty decent speeds. 16 hours battery life as well. Two USB-C ports, one faster than the other, so keep that in mind for data transfer and that sort of aspect. One port will do it slower than the other. And it still includes a headphone jack. It has not been forgotten. So that for me is one of the highlights. They have also released, if you want the more powerful laptops, they've got new MacBook Airs coming out as well, £500 more. You can get two different models, two different sizes, and 13-inch starts at £1,099, whereas 15-inches starts at £1,299. They also have new MacBook Pros, so powerful, powerful laptops. They've got two processors. One is M5 Pro, and one is M5 Max. Both, without going into the kind of super speed details, very powerful. Not the cheapest laptops. Pricing for the 14-inch one with the M5 Pro processor starts at £2,099. The 16-inch M5 Pro model with the Max processors start at £2,699. There is a new iPad Air with the M4 processor as well, in two different sizes of 13-inch and 11-inch, and both have Wi-Fi and Wi-Fi and cellular models. All these devices have fancy colours as well, if you are interested. The Wi-Fi model for the smallest iPad Air starts at £599, going upwards for the different screen sizes and Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi and cellular models. The other highlight for me, though, iPhone 17e. I was not expecting the next kind of Apple's affordable iPhone to come this early. It's released a year after iPhone 16e, I think, which I found a little surprising. The big jump, really, is MagSafe. It supports MagSafe, so MagSafe cases that can magnetically stick onto the back of your iPhone, or magnetic power banks that you can stick to the bottom, to the back of your iPhone as well. Outside of that, it does have the latest generation A19 processor, screen sizes are the same compared to the previous model, so that has not changed. More colours, including a soft pink version as well.
They seem to like the 599 price theme as well. I noticed it's 599. Mm-hmm. They're all considered purchases, but, you know, I do like the Neo, though. That does sound, you know, for an actual MacBook, wow.
The Neo probably is the highlight for me from this event because it's for what you get. You know, they say it's the most affordable laptop, and a lot of people would kind of go, oh, it's not going to be very good. The spec is actually, I've listened to comparison videos between that and the MacBook, the new MacBook Airs, and actually, it's not, they're not too far apart. Yeah. Obviously, there are some differences to validate the price tag, but, you know, it's not too bad. And the devices will be available in store from the 11th of March, but you can pre-order them as you listen. But the availability starts on the 11th of March for all of these.
I think with a lot of these things, it depends what you're using it for. You know, most people don't need 32 gigabyte RAM and, you know, a terabyte of storage. You know, most of us don't need that. Obviously, if you do need it, then go for it. But it's worth sometimes taking a step back from all the dazzling numbers and just thinking, hang on a minute, what am I actually using it for? You know, because like I say, most people don't. I think for those of us who use assistive technology, you often do want a bit extra RAM or that kind of thing. But because VoiceOver and Zoom is integrated into the MacBooks, I don't think you need to consider that so much. Though I would encourage anybody who does use VoiceOver or Zoom to have a bit of a trial, maybe have a few lessons even in an Apple store on how to use it, because certainly I didn't find it intuitive. When I first opened up a MacBook, I found it very hard to get my head around.
It is a transition process. It is. But it is worth to go to the Apple store and even just have a go on one of these. You know, the Apple store staff will let you have a go on these devices. I've certainly had to do that when I got my first ever Mac, and, you know, you can have a look and go, actually, this does work, or, you know, it doesn't work. And I like that they have that sort of base model now, because like Natalie said, not everyone needs a machine to make an Oscar-winning movie like that. You can actually just have a simple laptop that does the basics. And I think with what you're getting here, it will do a pretty decent job of that.
You know, VoiceOver users like ourselves, as Natalie said, you know, because it's built in, I don't think it's as imperative on a Mac to have that big, beefy amount of RAM and stuff the way that I think you do on Windows, because, you know, JAWS is quite hungry, it's quite resource intensive. And if you're doing things in the workplace, like using Teams and Outlook and Microsoft Word and your browser open, if you've got all those open all day, then I can see the point in having 16 to 32 gig of RAM, but not on a Mac for just tinkering about, learning things and just doing some very basic tasks.
Yeah. If I had to summarize this, I would say if you're just doing, you know, a bit of email, a bit of browsing, maybe working on some fairly small, you know, fairly basic documents, go for the Neo and you'll be absolutely fine. But if you're wanting to just sort of future-proof, not necessarily future-proof, but if you want to kind of play around with some of this AI stuff a little bit more as it becomes more local, more on-device, then maybe go for the MacBook Air just to give yourself that little bit of extra power. But I would stick to those two. I really don't think many of us listening to this would need the Pro. There you go. Some interesting stuff from Apple there. I think this Neo is going to fly off the shelves. This is going to be really interesting when that comes out. Natalie, have you anything else caught your eye this week?
Yeah, on a completely different vein, I stumbled across this totally by chance. I was on social media and one of those DAF surveys came up and I was bored, so I did it. And it was, you know, what's the perfect health routine for you? Anyway, I got to the end of the survey and as we could all have predicted, it said, if you want to see the results of this survey, you need to actually pay something.
Of course.
And I thought, oh, do you know what? I will. Actually, I will.
Wow.
And because for once, it wasn't exorbitantly priced. It was, well, I say the results of the survey, it actually created a bespoke health plan for you. And I was more curious than anything. And it said, I think it was like £8 for a week, £16 for a month, or £24 for 3 months or something like that. So I went down the middle. I went for the month and I thought, let's just see what happens here. And it took me to a web page, blah, blah, blah. And what I found was it was actually an app. I mean, I'm sure you could do it through the web browser if you wanted to, but it was an app called Nordletics. So N for November, ORD for Delta, LETICS. And it's supposedly based on sort of the Nordic countries and how they're, air quotes, so much healthier than we are. But what I found interesting was when I did the survey, for example, one of the questions it asked was, how much would you like to exercise in a week? And I thought, how much do I want to? None. how much should I? We'll go with three. And what I found was when I downloaded the app and logged in, it had set up a 4 week, so i.e. the month that I paid for, training plan with three separate exercise sessions for each one. And they're each about 10 minutes long. And on the front page, you could see sort of very high level what it was. So it'd be like cardio or strengthening or stretch and relax or something like that. So you know roughly what you're getting into. What I found good about it was reasonably accessible. I say with a lot of these things, you know, it's not perfect. They never are. But I could click on the different options easily enough, hit play, 10-minute video. I found it was all fairly descriptive. It maybe helps if you've done some of these things before, but on the whole, I thought the descriptions were quite clear as to what it wanted you to do without having to see the screen. And then at the end of a week, there's a little score at the top that says, in my case, 1/4 weeks completed, sort of 25% the way there. And I just thought it was quite good because I think for lots of people with disabilities, exercising and keeping healthy can be just harder. It just is. You know, it's not so easy to go out for a run. It's not so easy to get to your local leisure centre. It's not so easy to work a treadmill or a cross trainer because everything's turning touchscreen. And this was something, for once, like I say, it wasn't rip-off prices. It was reasonably accessible, both digitally and sort of from the actual video's perspective. And you could do it at home and you could set your own pace. It had different aspects as well, like I think you can set a food plan and meal plan and all that stuff. And I thought I can't bother doing that. So I can't comment on those features. But having given the app a bit of an explore and had it for a week and done it for a week, I thought this is quite good and maybe worth a share.
Do you know what? Fair play to you for trying that. I think as soon as I saw, well, the payment would have put me off, but I think as soon as I saw it was an app as well, my immediate assumption would have just been, ah, that's not accessible. You know, an app and fitness combined. That, yeah, I wouldn't have gone for that. But I keep meaning to try these out, these apps that create a training plan and things like that. But I mean, yeah, there's always the typical reluctance to exercise.
Yeah, I mean, I would never normally have done it. I think they just caught me on a good day or a bored moment, and I was like, yeah, all right, I'll give this a go.
Yeah, I think what I worry about is the accessibility of the app itself, but then, like you said, the accessibility of the videos and the instructions, because I've never done exercise really. Well, I have, but I don't know what all these different like terminology and, you know, different types of exercise mean. So I would need something really descriptive, or I would need to get myself some sort of text description of what it actually is. But yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of fitness services out there, so this is one of them that's worth a try.
What I would say, yeah, if you do find if there's some exercises that come up and you're like, nope, don't know what that is, never be scared to just make something up. You know, I'm kind of the opinion as long as you're moving, as long as you're doing something, it works. So say it says do a backstep and lunge and you don't know what that is. Now, like I said, this app is a bit more descriptive than that, but for argument's sake, say it did. If you're like, I have no idea what that is, just run on the spot for a minute until the next exercise comes up. As long as you're moving, as long as you're working, I don't think it in some ways matters all that much, but I personally really like a structure. I like having something to aim for. I like knowing that it's time limit to only 10 minutes because I did the cardio block and I thought I'm breathing out of all ends at this point. So yeah, like I say, give it a go if you're interested.
Yeah, worth a try. Just give us the name of that app again.
So it's Nordletics, Nordletics.
Okay, there you go. Nordletics, give that a try. Well, there's been a couple of updates from WeWork this week. Apple weren't the only tech company having events. WeWork had an annual summit, which was interesting. It's the first one I know of, but by the sounds of it, they're looking to do these every year. So kind of cool that that's happening. A couple of the announcements. So We Assist, which we spoke about a couple of times. I don't know if they would necessarily like me phrasing it this way, but it's kind of the easiest way to say it. It's a bit like Aira, really. So you call up and you connect to a trained agent who can give you assistance with whatever you need through a video call. That has been rolled out in a couple more countries. So the US, Canada, and Australia is now available. And you can try it for free. I'm not sure how long that is. They say there's complimentary minutes available of assistance, but there's no info that I can find on how many minutes or how long that's running for. So I would say if you're interested in that, then while it's free, give it a go if it's available in your country. I think it's still free in the UK as well. So worth a try. And you don't have to have the smart cane for that. In fact, you don't have to have the smart cane for any of WeWork's features, the assist or the navigation. So still worth trying out. As I've said before, I didn't really take to the smart cane too well, but there is a lot of people really, really enjoying it. And a couple of updates to the cane itself as well. Again, I can't comment too much on these, but they've added a calibration feature, which helps to improve the navigation. And they've made some updates to the AI assistant as well. So it can now tie into the cane itself, and you can ask it things like what's the battery level of the cane, and things like that. So just tighter integrations. So some quite cool stuff there, I think. Some quite nice little updates.
That is cool. I've not tried one of those smart canes, but I would like to have a go at some point, maybe at a site village or something like that.
They are worth a try. Yeah, Site Village is a good shout. The only thing I would say with any of these, the obstacle detection is a bit of an interesting one to try out. I would really love, I don't know if they offer this, but I would love it if you could take the cane outside for a little bit at these events, because when you're indoors, it's just going to be beeping and vibrating all the time. And that's not because it's a bad product, it's just because you're indoors. There's people about, there's desks, tables and chairs and all that kind of stuff.
I just want something that stops me walking face first into hedges.
Yeah, massively. Well, another interesting week. As always, stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
Now on RNIB Tech Talk, if you've been listening to RNIB Connect Radio, you would have heard us mention that we have a new shiny Instagram account. Yes, you can now follow our day-to-day things we do here at RNIB Connect Radio on Instagram. See our various photos and videos, all, of course, with accessibility in mind, labeled and provided with alt text and things like that. However, what's Instagram like from an accessibility perspective itself? Well, actually, we're going to show you this today. And I remember when I first started using Instagram, mainly downloaded it out of curiosity because I wanted to see, and it was quite a while back, I think it was about 6 years ago, I wanted to see how usable would such a predominantly visual platform be for someone who doesn't have any vision. So I'll show you the app today. We may not necessarily look at accessibility of content because that really depends on individual users and whether they include accessibility with their content. But what we will do is just take a quick look around the app to show you what you can expect.
Instagram. Stopping Braille screen input. Instagram. Create a post. Story or live video. Button. Opening Instagram.
So we've got Instagram opened, and the first button it has focused us on.
Create a post. story or live video button.
So quite simple. This is where you can create any post. You can post photos or you can post a video or you can even go live and stream video to your followers.
Create a post, story or live video button.
So I'll show you. This is that kind of main feed tab.
Selected. Main feed tab. 1 of 5.
So this is the first tab of 5 bit of a main feed. So this is where you'll see all the accounts you follow. You'll see their content. So let me show you what you got here.
Run up radio. 14 hours ago. Video. 3 likes. 2 comments. Happy World Book Day stack of books. This week's read on. The audiobook show is all about the day which celebrates reading for children and young people. Stories tray. Button. Your story. Notifications, unread, button.
So here you've got a lot of things there. You've got your... So we've seen a post from RNIB Connect Radio. At the time of this recording, this was the week of the World Book Day.
Instagram main feed, button.
You've got notifications. You can look at your Instagram main feed. The next tab...
Reels, tab, 2 of 5.
...is Reels, or in other words, as these days, videos, which are more often called Reels now on Facebook and Instagram. It works similar to Facebook, where if you tap on that, you'll be able to watch various short or longer videos from... various accounts. Again, some of it may be who you follow, some of it may be suggested to you, and you can swipe through video content quite simply. And what happens when you're in the Reels is if you put your finger in the middle of the screen where the video will be and then swipe up with 3 fingers. Every time you swipe up with 3 fingers, you'll move on to the next reel. Because yes, some of them will not be accessible, or some of them you just might not be interested in. So it works like the Facebook Reels tab. So if you're familiar with that, you'll be familiar with this one as well.
Reels, direct messages, 0 unread messages, tab, 3 of 5.
The next one is fairly self-explanatory, direct messages. You can use them in Instagram. I don't often get them, but I do on occasion. So it's one way to interact with your followers.
Explore, tab, 4 of 5, search field.
So this is where you can search for accounts, for example.
Video by Antandek. Button.
And you can explore other bits of content. As you've heard there, it just says video by Antandek or something like that. So the problem is, again, content really does depend on who posts it as to how accessible it will be to you. So it is a predominantly visual platform, but it can be made accessible in terms of content so long as users do remember to make it inclusive.
Profile, tab, 5 of 5.
Next is profile, self-explanatory again, but we'll show you it.
Tap to open creation menu, button.
So tap to open creation menu, so you allow you to again create posts.
You put Paul Kimix, button.
And there's my name, can't say it properly, but that's my complicated name for you.
Switch to Threads, 9 plus new notifications, button.
So Instagram and Threads are quite, work together, so you can actually switch to the Threads app from here should you want to do so.
Tap to open settings and activity, button.
Then you can look at your settings.
Hubert Pavelkovic.
There's me.
Posts count, 16 posts, button.
So I've made 16 posts. That is in 6 years. I don't use Instagram that often just because I don't really often take too many photos and videos. Now I have the Meta glasses, and that sort of slowly is changing, and I do tend to put stuff up a bit more, which I enjoy doing.
Followers. 99 followers. Button.
It's my followers. Not many, but I'm not really someone that craves that sort of thing.
Following. 44 following. Button.
So I'm following. I don't follow too many accounts, just mainly because, again, for me, it's all about accessible content. And if certain accounts don't do the content in an accessible fashion, you don't really get much out of following them.
Try sharing a song. Ellipsis.
You can share songs on Instagram. I've done it before. It's not too bad. I've not worked out how to actually hear the audio. Now...
Triple tap to change profile picture, button.
You can change your profile picture. I've tried to do this recently. That wasn't accessible in a sense that it wasn't telling me what photos I was looking at. Because usually in most apps, when you're uploading photos, the least you'll get is the ability to browse through your photos and get a timestamp of when the photo was taken, which is usually a good way of identifying which photo you want.
Edit profile, button.
You can edit your profile, you can add your website links or anything else, or a bio if you want.
Share profile, button.
You can share your profile.
Selected, button.
Not sure what that is. as it's unlabeled.
Discover people, heading.
So you can discover people to follow. If you, it will give you suggestions of people you follow based on who you follow already and maybe who you've got on your Facebook and stuff, because all the apps from Meta, i.e. Threads, Instagram, Facebook, they're all linked in some ways with each other. So they will use the information from that to be able to suggest you things. Then you've got ways to sort your content. So you've got grid.
Reels, tab, 2 of 3.
Some reels.
Tagged, tab, 3 of 3.
Posts you're tagged in.
2 photos or videos from Hubert Paul Kulix. Button, image.
And that, in a simple, short description, is Instagram. Like I said, predominantly visual, but to me, for a very visual platform, it is actually quite accessible, which I didn't expect the first time I got it. But the good thing is, it is accessible and content can be made accessible as long as people that upload it do use all the accessibility features, you know, put captions or alternative text where available, as long as videos are also, you know, audio led and things like that. There is ways to make content accessible, and as Alpha here and social media teams always make sure they do. And even the Reels tab, I sometimes like to just scroll through it because some of the videos will actually be interesting. And if I'm bored and have not much to do, sometimes that will kill a few minutes to watch them. So what do you think of Instagram? Do you have any tips on how to use Instagram in a more accessible way? Are you a content creator yourself and make accessible Instagram content? What would you say you focus on to make sure content is inclusive? And also, do you use Instagram yourself? Let us know what you think of it. What would you like to see Instagram improve in terms of accessibility? And just in general, any thoughts, welcome. Let us know. That is Instagram, though. And if you do want to follow RNIB Connect Radio, you can follow us on Instagram. It's at RNIB Radio. Let us know what you think of Instagram and, well, anything else tech-related. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Recently on Tech Talk, we've been talking a bit about home recording. We had that demo of the Podtrac P4 Next last week, and we've been talking quite a bit about the range of Zoom recorders in particular. And I thought it'd be good to just have a chat about some of the home recording equipment that's out there, whether that's recording content just on your mobile device or recording your very own podcast even. Let's start off with kind of a simple one for just recording on mobile devices. Have any of you got any tips or advice on this one? I mean, the iPhone has voice memos built in, which is quite a nice little simple app.
That's pretty decent. I also use Just Press Record, which is quite a good app, which I used to use to record when I used to record more on the iPhone. And I think the reason I like that app in particular is for two reasons. One is actually to do with sharing audio, which we'll talk about later. But I also like that it saves to your iCloud drive and you can access the files kind of on most devices. So you've got an app like RecUp, which records to Dropbox, for example. This one records to iCloud drive. And it's quite a simple app because you open it and you just press record, as the name suggests. And also, this app has an Apple Watch version too. I mean, Voice Memos does as well. But you can actually look at your Apple Watch recording separately as well. So, yeah, it's quite a decent app. But I think there's a lot of recording apps for the iPhone. It just depends which one you like using most, which one's more accessible, or maybe which one has particular features that you quite like.
There's a lot of them out there. In terms of Android, I'm not sure. I think there are recording apps out there for Android. There are plenty of them in the Play Store, so I guess it's kind of trial and error what people like, what they prefer. But yeah, for both platforms, definitely there is a lot to choose from.
I think with Android, it depends on your device as well, as many things do with Android. There's some of them that come with voice memos type apps built in. I couldn't find one on the Samsung phone that I've got, but it's possible that I could be missing it. But it depends on your manufacturer. You know, some might include their own apps. I did find one in the Play Store just called Voice Recorder. And that's a nice little simple app. You open it, you've got an option to choose your input. So if you've got a microphone connected, then you could choose that, or you could choose your built-in mic, and then you just, similar to the other one, you just press record. It's got a start recording, and that changes to a stop recording, and it just saves it into a little folder on your device or on Google Drive if you want it to. So, yeah, very nice. And it's funny, Hubert mentioned the Apple Watch version of just press record there. We'll be talking a little bit more about microphones in a minute, but that microphone on the Apple Watch is really decent. It's really good.
Yeah, it is good, yeah.
It's a nice small little mic for basic recordings. I think it does a fantastic job, because sometimes you may not have your phone on you, or sometimes you just may not want to hold the phone or to have it near you when to have it recording. The watch does a really, really excellent job at it.
How have you found these? I'm only asking you guys this because you have gone to quite a lot of events and things like that, maybe a bit more than I have. How have you found these handheld recorders, like the Zoom ones? I feel like that they record on, you've then got to have your SD card handy and, you know, plug that into your computer and get the recordings off there. And how have you found them? Because I know they're a little bit more complex in some ways.
Yeah, the thing for me that I find with the handheld recorders is a lot of them, particularly the Zoom Essential, the H1, which is a really nice sized recorder to carry around. It's so lightweight and convenient. But the thing about some of these, and this is the case with the Olympus recorders that we used to have as well, although I've still got one, but the handling with your hands, if you are, you know, speaking to somebody, you really need to keep your hand as still as possible when you're holding a handheld one out to speak to somebody, because it can really make a lot of kind of rattly noise when you're holding it. So, you know, it's, in some respects, that's the disadvantage of having a hand recorder. And also, if you're in a really busy environment, you need to, if you don't have headphones and you just use the hand recorder, you need to make sure that you hear the bleep when you press the record button, because if you don't hear it, you might think you're recording and you've got a great interview, and then when you get away from the recording and you go back to it, you realize it's not there at all because you've not heard the record button. So it's
we've all done.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is.
I've done that twice during one interview.
Yeah, so that for me is the disadvantage of. I think they're great in their own way. I've still got my Olympus LS14, which is quite nice because it doesn't pick up as much hand noise, but the Essential does, I think. And some of the Olympus recorders, if you can still get them, they do.
Yeah. So I do 99.9% of the stuff for this show in particular from home. So I've got a little home setup. I think calling it a home studio is probably making it sound a lot fancier than it is. But before I got into all of this properly, when you said home studio or home recording setup, I used to think of, like, you had to have a room basically converted in your house and purposely built, and it all had to be soundproofed, and you had a huge, you know, loads of expensive equipment, and it was very much of like, don't come in here, don't touch anything unless you know what you're doing. But it's really not. I mean, for the first year or first 18 months or so of this show, all I had was just a microphone, a USB microphone plugged into my laptop and a pair of headphones. That was it. That was all I used. And it really can be as simple as that. I think try and have, in terms of the room, I think a room with kind of soft furnishings around you is a good start. You know, carpet floors, ideally, and things like that, just to dampen that sound a little bit. But if you get a decent microphone, it doesn't have to be soundproofed in the slightest. Little things can make a difference. I always do the recordings with my curtains closed, because, you know, that can, and it's not the end of the world if they're not, but it just kind of just dampens that room noise a little bit. But what I've got now, I've had a step up a little bit, and I've got what's called an audio interface. And all it is just a tiny little device that lets you connect more than one thing. So you could connect a couple of microphones and maybe your smartphone or another device that you want to record. Then you connect those to the interface, you plug that into your computer, and then it can see all those inputs and outputs, and you've got a lot more flexibility then as to where you can send your audio. We're talking on Zoom now, and I've got it set so that you guys can hear me. If I've got my phone connected, I could play that through, but you can't hear my jaws if I'm navigating around. But then if for some reason I wanted to send jaws through the call so you guys could hear it and you guys listening could hear it, I could change the output on jaws to another channel and it would go through the call. So it sounds a lot more complex than it is, but it is pretty simple when you get used to it. And I've got, if you're interested, I've got the Vocaster 2 audio interface, which I would really highly recommend. There's no touch screen. It's all physical volume controls for your headphones and your microphone levels. A physical mute button, that's always worth having. So I've got a little button here that I can just press and it mutes me instantly. In terms of microphones, so I bought the studio bundle of the Vocaster, so there was a microphone included. So mine is the DM14V from Focusrite, who make the Vocaster. I don't think you can buy that microphone on its own. I think you've got to get it in the bundle, but I hear a lot of good things about the Samson Q2U microphone. I don't know if either of you use that.
That's what I've
got. Yeah. So that sounds really good. On reflection, I kind of wish I'd have got that microphone, because something that I didn't pay too much attention to at the time was that it's got XLR and USB, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's a bit more flexible with that.
Yeah, I like that. When Jonathan was doing his reviews, he talked about that microphone, and I went for that, and I now use that with the Podtrac P4 Next, which I'm really pleased with. So that's kind of my setup. The problem I had with thinking about the Vocaster 2 was that I couldn't use it on my work laptop because it needs some software, and of course you can't install things like that on your work machine. So for me, the Podtrac P4 Next with the Samson, that's S-A-M-S-O-N, not the Samsung phones or tablets. So the Q2U is quite nice. And if I want to record on my iPhone, just do a small recording or a demo of something, I've bought these little two microphones in a box, and they're wireless, so you can attach them to your clothing. They're very small, so you've got to be careful not to drop the little magnet. So you put the microphone against a jumper or whatever you're wearing, and you put the little magnet against it, and it really does grip. It's a really good fit on the back of your clothing. So you put the microphone on the outside and the magnet on the inside of your clothing, and you hook it to yourself. And there are two of these in the box. The box is a little chargeable case, a bit like having AirPods that you can charge up. So you've got one for USB-C, and you've got one for Lightning if you want to use that dongle. So you put the dongle in your phone, depending on what model you've got, and then you record. And these are called the Hollyland. They're spelled H-O-L-L-Y-L-A-N-D, Lark, L-A-R-K-A-1. And you can buy them online anywhere, most places. And they're pretty cheap, but they are really good if you just want something external, but you don't want wires. And you can just plug in a little dongle, and they're very good recordings. You can use it with all your phone apps. There's no software to install. There is an app, but you don't need to use it. You can just plug in the dongle, press record or rec up, whatever you're using, and it'll start recording for you. It's really good.
Another reason, though, I'd suggest getting the interface, audio interface, and this brings me quite nicely onto editing, actually, is what that means if you're using, so I use Reaper, and when you're recording, say I'm doing a demo and I've got this microphone connected, but I've also got my phone connected up. What you can do on these software like Reaper, and Audacity is another popular one, you can record them on separate tracks which basically means, in simple terms, they're both on their own file, but time-wise they sync together, so they just sort of go together. But it means that if I'm talking and then a notification comes in and VoiceOver talks over me, or I talk over VoiceOver, or even with us on this call, we're recording in separate tracks. So you talk over each other, which we actually do all the time, but you can't tell because of editing. It means that when we're editing that, if that happens, you can edit the audio separately. So I could just, if VoiceOver spoke over me, I could just snip that little bit out of VoiceOver's track and you'd never know. And it just makes it, if it's all in single track and you talk over each other, it's pretty much impossible to fix, or sometimes it is impossible to fix, really. So that is another good thing if you can.
And you can also control everyone's volume. So if someone's a bit quiet, if someone's a bit loud, you can also control the volumes a bit better. I mean, this is going towards the more kind of professional editing, but it does make a difference. I know I used to edit in single track many years ago, and then I was eventually told, actually, multi-track editing for voices is multiple participants is a lot better. And it is. It gives you more control over each quality of each audio, and you can make sure that it all sounds as good as it can.
The software that I use, if I do a demo or do any editing, I use something called Studio Recorder, which is from APH. It's a very basic software package. It is available from, as I say, the APH website in the States. If you want to buy it, though, in the UK, you have to phone them. This is the only thing I found, that you have to actually phone them. You can't buy it online. I'm not really sure why that is. You phone them up and you place your order, and they normally do attend to it within the same day or the day after. They send you a code. You can download the software and it's in demo mode, but then you phone them up, pay the money for that demo to be converted to a proper usable copy. They send you a key by email and you put that key into the software. I think that happens with a lot of software. I've really struggle with Reaper. I need somebody to give me a few good lessons on how to use it. So if you just want something basic that you're just going to edit a file, then Studio Recorder does it. Audacity is free. So that's a multi-track recorder. So, you know, Audacity, a lot of musicians like using it. And it, as I say, it's free.
The good thing with Audacity online as well, you can actually get a full written guide for screen reader users, for JAWS and NVDA and that sort of thing. So, you know, you can actually get a full detail of how different features work with screen readers and your keyboard. There is one tool that isn't very accessible in Audacity, but you only really need that in very certain specific audio editing cases, which is the time shifting tool. But other than that, it is actually very accessible. It takes some learning, but that guide, if you search for Audacity Accessibility Guide, you'll be able to get taken to the right page, and you'll have to click through a few things to get to the right version of the guide, because there's guides for different versions. But I highly recommend it, because that is how I learned to use Audacity very quickly.
Yeah, I don't really know why I went with Reaper in the end. It is massively overkill for podcast editing. To be, I mean, you can use it, but I mean, I'm not even scratching the surface of what Reaper can do. The most I'm doing is cleaning things up, as I said before, about that multi-track thing. If something like that goes on, just tidying that up, cutting things out, you know, if something goes wrong, just kind of chopping things out. And if I've rambled on too much, which I do all the time, which won't surprise anyone, just cutting some of that down in the edit, just thinking, okay, I've repeated myself there, or I don't really need that. That's about all I'm doing, to be honest, in Reaper. And Reaper does have a lot of accessibility info as well. If you just Google Reaper accessibility, there's a dedicated website, I think, or at least a set of dedicated pages for getting started with Reaper with a screen reader. And there is a mailing list as well. I want to mention this just because I love the name. If you want support with Reaper, there is a mailing list, and I'm not making this up, mailing list for blind people using Reaper, and it's called Reapers Without Peepers, which I just think is brilliant.
That's right.
That is great. But that's a mailing list worth joining as well, and you can ask questions on there. For sharing audio, I mean, once you've recorded and edited and all that, if you even need to edit, sharing has got a lot simpler nowadays, hasn't it? I think pretty much most popular platforms will just let you upload audio. I mean, even YouTube is really popular for podcasts.
If you want to upload your podcast but you don't have a video, you only have the audio, there are a few solutions. There are websites that will upload a picture, do a still picture video, which is basically audio with just one single image as a picture, to allow you to upload it to sites like YouTube, which mainly do video. However, just press record, and I'm not exactly sure what it shows visually, but I've been told it's just a black screen. That when you share your audio, you can share video clip or you can share audio. And if you share video clip, if you tap on that option, I believe it generates you a video with a black screen. So you can technically share this to a video platform. Okay, it may not have the, you know, anything visual as such, but it will be then available for you to share to a few more platforms rather than having to look for audio-specific platforms such as, you know, Audioboom or Spotify for podcasters or other platforms of that kind of similarity.
If you do get into more of a podcasting side, I haven't used it, but I hear a lot of good things about Pinecast, if anyone's used that. That's pretty reasonably priced for podcast hosting, and I hear that's very accessible. And the developer is really responsive as well to suggestions and to accessibility suggestions. If you want more details on any of this, because obviously it does all get a bit complicated when you're trying to explain things, you know, trying to explain everything in one go. But I've mentioned this a couple of times. There's the Blind Podmaker podcast. This isn't your weekly or monthly podcast. In fact, some clients might even show it as an inactive podcast. Something will just pop up every now and again. If a new device comes out or there's a tip on editing that someone sent in, it will usually be uploaded there. And Jonathan Mosen's got some great demos on there. I think he's done all of the Zoom recorders. He's done a brilliant demo of the Vocaster interface that me and Hubert have got. So that is well worth checking out. And just sort of Google around. I mean, you will get people saying you need to spend hundreds on a microphone and a mixer and all this kind of stuff. You really don't. So that's a few tips from us. If you've got anything that you want to share on this, if you've got any suggestions or any software or any equipment that you use, definitely let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk as usual for how you can get in touch with us.
Today I'm going to speak to you about the Revitive Muscle Stimulation Medical Device. Yes, that is a bit different from the normal tech that we have on the programme. Nevertheless, I found this device really, really helpful, and I'd like to share some information about it with you, because although it's low tech, I think it might be worthwhile for some people. Now, basically, Revitive, and I'll spell that, it's Revitive. If you want more information, you can go to revitive.com, but you can buy this device in a lot of different places online if you want to find out more about it. But it is a really useful piece of equipment, and I'll explain what it does and how it works. So basically, I am the sort of person that doesn't move around. I don't get as much exercise as I could and should for a lot of different reasons. But the Revitive, it's been advertised on TV quite a lot. I think Claire Balding does an advert about it on TV. And it actually is a muscle stimulation piece of equipment. And you put it on the floor. It's a big round base, and it sits on the floor, and you have to put your bare feet on each of the rubber pads that are on the top of the device. And it sort of rocks backwards and forwards because it isn't completely flat. So whatever you do, don't think it's like a pair of weighing scales and stand on it, whatever you do, because you're likely to fall off it. So it has rubber feet underneath, and you just put it on the floor or somewhere where you're comfortable and sit down. Put your feet on the two rubber pads that are on it. And then in the middle is a touch screen. And you think, oh no, not one of those. How are we going to access it? Ah, but wait a minute. There is a small remote control. And everything that you can do with the touch screen, you can do with the remote control. So it is fully accessible. So as I say, it's a big round base. And if you hold it with, there is a handle at the 12 o'clock position, and there are two holes on the right hand side, two ports. One of them, the larger port, is a round port, and you put in the charging plug, because this has an internal battery that you can charge. And the smaller round hole of the two, you can attach two TENS pads to it that come with the device, but you don't have to use the TENS part of it. Now, TENS and EMS are two different things. Electrical muscle stimulation is what the default is for this device. And what it does is when you put your feet on and you turn it on and you adjust the intensity to the level that you want, you will feel your legs and your feet vibrating, and it stimulates the muscles in the backs of your legs going up to your knees, and it stimulates your feet as well. So if you have, say, swollen ankles, or you are a diabetic, or you don't have a lot of exercise and you don't move around a lot, it kind of stimulates the nerves and the muscles in your feet so that it feels as if you are getting a good workout. But of course, it depends on the intensity level that you have. And then you can plug in, as I say, in the smaller hole of the two at the 3 o'clock position on the right side of the base, you can plug in a little TENS pads. They're very sticky pads, and there's a cable that comes out of that, and you can put them on your shoulders or your arms or your legs or on your back, wherever you want. And these are TENS. Now, TENS stands for transcutaneous electronic nerve stimulation. So it's slightly different to EMS, which is electrical muscle stimulation. And the Revitiv is really the EMS, that's its main point, but it can also allow you to use TENS pads that are provided in the box. So the remote control is very tactile. It's very straightforward to use. And it only has a few buttons. If you hold the remote control, there is a circle at the top with four half moon shaped buttons going round in the circle. And in the middle of that circle is your on off. So if you press it once, it bleeps once. If you turn it off, it bleeps three times. So when you've done a workout with your feet and your legs, you can turn it off. Well, actually, it turns itself off when you've been on it for 30 minutes. That's the default, is 30 minutes. But if you want to increase the time, you can use the buttons on the remote control to increase the time that you want, and you can also increase the severity, if you like, or the intensity, I think it's fair to say, of the device as well. So the four buttons on the circle sort of surround, you know, like half moon shaped buttons in this circle. The top left one is to decrease the intensity. The top right one is to increase the intensity. You are recommended to start from about 40 upwards, really. It goes up from, you know, it goes up from 0 to 99. So to be honest, you're going to get the best out of this the higher your intensity level. So I've had it up to about 70 or 80, and I don't feel any discomfort with it, but you do feel that your legs and your feet are getting a good workout. So the higher you have it, the better really it is for you, and it's then doing its job. As I say, though, it doesn't hurt, and if it does hurt you, stop. So the two lower buttons in that circle, the left one is to adjust the time that you decrease the time level, and the right one, you increase the time level. I've never needed to do that because I do half an hour in the morning and I do half an hour at night, and that's what the manual recommends. So if you want to do more than that or you want to do less, that's absolutely fine. But at any point, you can turn the Revitiv off by pressing the round button in the middle of the circle. So that's your on-off button. Now, below this are two other buttons. One of them is for EMS and the other one is for TENS, TENS, okay? And what you will find is if you remove your feet from the pads, the unit will pause. It will sort of stop working. So you do need to keep your feet on the pads, on the rubber pads, in order to keep it going. But it is a really, really interesting little device. It's lightweight. You can do it wherever you want. Just sit comfortably in a chair. Make sure that your feet are flat, so your knees are bent. That's the best way to get out of it. And then the higher your intensity level, the more the machine will rock from backwards and forwards. It will sort of rock because it's sort of moving up and down with your leg muscles and your feet muscles, which is being controlled by Revitiv. There is a really good user manual. I've scanned this and I found it really easy to scan. That comes in the box. You have to register. Well, you don't have to, but you would register your device if you want the warranty on it, obviously. And you would do that. That is pretty straightforward as well. It's pretty self-explanatory. There is a serial number underneath the Revitiv. And if somebody could read that serial number to you, then you could register your device. But again, you don't have to register it if you don't want to. But it does help if anything goes wrong with it. They are supposedly really good at replacing or repairing or even maybe changing the battery, which doesn't look as if you can do as a user. So I don't know what the battery is, but it looks as if it's built into the device. So if you have to send it back, it probably is worth your while registering it. But it is a really useful device, and I thought it would be worth sharing because there are a lot of people out there who, for whatever reason, they can't move around as much as they would like to. I'm one of those people because of the back problems that I have, and I find that I can put that under my desk and it doesn't make a noise. So it's not intrusive. So if you're in a Teams meeting and you fancy giving your legs a workout while you're doing it, then that's absolutely fine. It doesn't interfere with anything. There are a couple of cautions. If you are pregnant or if you have a pacemaker or some electronic device in your body, you would need to make sure with your doctor that you check first before you use it. But I wholeheartedly recommend this device. I think it's been worth it. It is a considered purchase. It's £300. I bought mine online from the friendly Amazon store, of course, but you can get it from places like probably Boots, John Lewis, and Revitiv.com itself. So I hope this has been useful.
Let's have a quick look at the inbox then. We've had a couple of emails come in. So first one from Barry. He says, "Hi team, can you tell me how to do the swipe gesture on a Braille display? I can move around on my phone, but I can't do the swipe gesture. When I did the update to iOS 26 Beta 4, it messed up my on-phone keyboard and I had to go in and reset it." I'll hand over to the queen of Braille on this one. Although what I would say just quickly first off, if you're on a beta version of iOS, then things might vary because of the nature of a beta, things kind of go up and down a little bit in terms of bugs and features and stuff.
If you want to move from item to item, you would do space with dot 4 or space with dot 1 to go the other way. And if you want to use the three finger gesture to swipe, you would do space with O, dots 1, 3, 5, or space with dots 2, 4, 6, which is the OW sign, to go the other way.
I think space with dot 1 will move backwards between items, so the equivalent of flicking left, and space with dot 4 is the equivalent of flicking right. As I said, things might vary a little bit if you're on a beta version. But hopefully that gives you a bit of a hand there, Barry. Let us know how you get on with that. Ricky has also been in touch, and I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation of this one, but I'll do my best. He says, have any of you tried out the Albrecht talking radio supplied by Konrad Electronics from Germany? He says, there's a lot about it, but I haven't seen anyone trying out the talkback function. Do any of you have any ideas? I've not heard of this one. I'm always interested in the talking radios because these seem to come and go a little bit. So I did try getting in touch with Konrad Electronics. They do have a website that's in English, but I think, to be honest, because they're a German company, when I got in touch with them, I don't know if there was a little bit of a language barrier going on. The website, although it's in English, there are signs that it's been sort of translated. And they couldn't really quite get what I was saying, so I didn't really get many answers on this one, unfortunately. My worry with this is that a lot of these talking radios have come and gone, and they speak all the menus and the settings, which it says this one does, but they don't speak the station names. And I don't know if this is like that, but many of them seem to be, and I kind of worry that that might be the case with this one. They either don't speak the station names, or if they do, they're pre-recorded. So they're sort of pre-recorded voice prompts. And it means that if a station changes its frequency, then it might say, like, say Connect Radio moved to a different frequency. It might still say Connect Radio on your radio, but it would actually be something else that you're hearing. So, interesting. If anyone's tried that out, let us know, because I'm intrigued by this one as well. I'll just spell that brand name. It's Albrecht. That's how you spell the product name. So if anyone's tried that out or knows any more about it, let us know. Sounds like quite an interesting one. Finally, for now, David's been in touch. One for you, Hubert. He says, hello, Tech Talk team. A while ago, Hubert mentioned he tried the Pit-Pat device for dogs, the tracker. I've made inquiries with the Pit-Pat company about buying one for my partner, who's a guide dog user. Just wanted to know how he's getting on with it.
So, yes, thank you, David. I have the basic version, so not the one with the GPS, because the GPS one is considerably more expensive. However, I have an AirTag in his collar. But the PitPat device itself, yeah, it's going pretty well. Since he's a joint PitPat, he's walked the entire length of the South Coast, apparently, according to one of my distance badges. I would say the accessibility of the app, it is there, but be mindful not all sections of the app are easy to read. I think the summary section has a lot to be desired. I think it's not easy to read. You'll get a lot of numbers, and some of them look more impressive than others, but as to what each number corresponds to, it's not always very clear. So the two screens I look at the most is the activity screen, where you can look at your exercise minutes for your dog and whether you're achieving your exercise goal. And the badges, I look at that quite a lot. Other parts I don't use so much, just because the accessibility seems a bit tricky. I think setup of the PitPat depends on which model you get. My one required me to actually turn on screen recognition to be able to actually do it in one of the screens. But I know the GPS one, to my knowledge, has a barcode/QR code to scan on the back of the device. So depending on which one you get, the setup will vary. But yeah, it works well. It's still being used. I would love the accessibility of the app to improve slightly. But as of yet, I've had no luck with that one.
Okay, so a bit of a mixed bag, I guess, with the accessibility of that one. I guess not fully accessible, but usable, then, is basically what you're saying.
I would say so. I think it all depends what you want to get. What specific information you'd take more focus on. You know, if you can manage your dog's food and stuff in there, I don't do it. For me, I just like it to track Caesar's stats, so how many minutes of exercise he does, and the badges can be quite fun. Outside of that, everything else kind of I'm not too concerned about. So for me, it works. But for someone who actually wants to pay attention to all the details, the accessibility isn't as easy there.
Okay, I hope that helps there, David. And if anyone else has got any answers to any of these or any tips on that radio, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And that is it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. We'll be back with you next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Until next time.
Bye.